On Saturday, April 26, 2003, Aaron Ralston set out to climb in Blue John Canyon near Canyon, being there for just a one-day hike. But as he used his rock climbing gear to negotiate narrow canyons, the unthinkable happened to him. He had pushed his arm into a crack in the canyon wall, and when he did that, an 800-pound boulder shifted and pinned him. So he tried to use his pocket knife to chip away at the boulder, but that didn't accomplish anything. He tried to rig a makeshift pulley with ropes to lift the boulder, but that didn't work either. After 3 days, having gone through most of his water and his food, Ralston knew he had to take radical action, so he decided to sacrifice his arm to save his life. And so he proceeded to use his knife to amputate his arm just below the right elbow. Amazingly able to remain conscious, the 27-year-old applied a makeshift tourniquet and rappelled 60 feet to the canyon floor to save his life. As difficult as it was, Ralston knew that it was better to lose one part of his body than to lose his whole life. When it comes to our spiritual survival, Christians may be called to make serious and difficult decisions as well. And Jesus actually talks about this in Matthew chapter 5, verse 27 to 30, where we learn that Christians, Jesus' followers, take drastic action in dealing with sin. Matthew chapter 5, we're going to look at four verses this morning. We are looking at, in these weeks, the distinctive nature of the Christian life, as opposed to just regular life, as opposed to how every normal, average people live. There is a distinctive way that Christians live, and it has to do with their morality, the way they treat people, the way they conduct themselves in this life. Jesus told his followers that they are the salt of the earth and the light of the world. And as they obeyed his teachings, living according to the will of God, they would give a lost world what it really needed. Examples of how life should be lived. They would be spiritual light in a fallen, dark world. And so we've started looking at the teachings of Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount because they are concentrated there for us. We find them listed, a series of them, one after another. And last week, in chapter 5, we looked at verses 21 to 26. And if you were here, you know that Jesus talked about murder and about anger. And he told them, and us as his followers as well, that we are to reconcile troubled relationships quickly, that we are not to let anger abide towards others, and that it was not allowable for us to be angry at one another or to use hurtful words towards each other, to insult and hurt people with our words. So we talked about that. But now we're going to hear what Jesus has to say about another one of the commandments, Ten Commandments. This one, the seventh commandment, that thou shalt not commit adultery. And he's going to talk about not only adultery, but lust and dealing with sin, how we are to deal with our sins. So let's go ahead and read these and then see how we can understand this morning. Beginning in verse 27. You have heard that it was said, you shall not commit adultery. But I say to you that everyone who looks at a woman with lustful intent has already committed adultery with her in his heart. If your right hand eye causes you to sin, tear it out and throw it away. For it is better that you lose one of your members than that your whole body be thrown into hell. And if your right hand causes you to sin, cut it off and throw it away. For it is better that you lose one of your members than that your whole body go into hell. Now, the following two verses continue this larger theme of adultery. And we will get to those, but not today. I'm going to talk about those in the context of more talking about marriage as well, in verses 31 and 32. But today I want to focus on what Jesus says about dealing with sin and temptation. But let me also say this as we begin, that I recognize that the way sin has come to be downplayed in our culture and even in the churches, it makes this really difficult to talk about. Really hard. There are even churches that purposely avoid the word sin because they don't want to offend people who happen to come to this service. Well, that's a problem because the Bible talks a lot about sin. Very much. But what we have in our society is a time when sin is not really what it understood in, as a serious matter as it has been in the past. D.A. Carson, who teaches at Trinity Evangelical Divinity School outside Chicago, wrote this regarding this passage. He says this. He says, our generation treats sin lightly. Sin in our society is better thought of as aberration or as an illness. It is to be treated, not condemned and repented of, and it must not be suppressed for fear of psychological damage. I think also in our society there is a thinking that sin is so prevalent that it almost doesn't even matter to talk about it anymore. And this is a dangerous place to be for Christians. So I'm going to talk about this, but I know that many people are probably thinking, well, this isn't serious. God doesn't really want us to treat sin or take sin this seriously, does he? But the truth is, Jesus hardly treats sin lightly. Jesus' remedy for sin is drastic and shocking. And if you read that passage, it is shocking. I remember reading it for the first time as a young Christian, and I didn't know if I wanted to be a Christian anymore, if this is the kind of thing it involved. So, what exactly is Jesus talking about here? What is he saying? So let's think about this for a few minutes this morning. Basically, he is saying a couple things. One, that keeping the seventh commandment involves more than the outward act of adultery. Now, this shouldn't surprise us that he says such things, because last week we saw that the commandment to not murder, to go and stick a knife in someone and kill them or kill them in some fashion, that the commandment prohibiting that involves much more than just the actual act of doing that. It involved anger. It involved words that were abusive. You couldn't do that, and Jesus said, regarding the sixth commandment. And so we see a similar thing here, that there is more to this commandment, and what he's going to talk about, the thing that's the more, the thing that's the difficult, the thing that is unfortunately prevalent among Christians today and is a real problem in our society, is hidden lustful thoughts. Now, if you go out and you commit adultery, you can get caught and people might catch you and see you. If you are simply committing adultery in your mind, well, no one can necessarily see that. So it has this hidden nature to it. But for Jesus, that doesn't make it okay. It doesn't make it right. Because it is a violation of not just the seventh commandment that you should not commit adultery, or you cannot commit adultery, but also the tenth commandment The 10th commandment prohibits coveting. In fact, in the popular Greek version of the Old Testament used in Jesus' day, the 10th commandment begins with these words: "You shall not covet your neighbor's wife." And in that Greek text or Greek Bible, it uses the same word for covet that Jesus uses here in Matthew 5:28, that is translated as lustful intent or lust. It's the same word, and it pretty much has the same meaning. It has to do with wanting something that is prohibited from you, something that isn't yours, something you shouldn't have, but you want it, you covet it, something that belongs to someone else that is not rightfully yours. And so looking with lustful intent is what he talks about here, but we want to also make it clear that this is not a prohibition of normal attraction which exists between women and men. This is just part of being human. But what he is speaking about is deliberately thinking, dwelling on the desire for an illicit relationship. It is, as I said before, mental adultery. And just because it's not carried out in the act, the Lord says here that you cannot do that, and that sort of thing has to be dealt with. It is, I think, kind of what Martin Luther's famous saying, you know, you cannot keep birds from flying over your head, but you can keep them from building a nest in your hair. It's that idea that you're dwelling upon something that's wrong, thinking about it, okay, and not just getting that thought out of your mind quickly, like people should. So that's one thing Jesus is saying here, is that the 7th commandment involves more than the outward act of adultery. The second thing he's saying, which grabs your attention in this verse, is that this sin, needs to be dealt with at all cost. It needs to be dealt with. And this is a grave matter, because Jesus speaks of spiritual death for not dealing with this sin. Your whole body thrown into hell. He says it twice, just in case people say, "What? What did he say?" Yeah, that's what he said. He doesn't say that, you know, it's better that you lose one part of your body than that you feel bad or feel convicted or lose your joy or feel guilty or something like that. No, look what he says. He says it is better to lose one of your members than your whole body be thrown into hell. And so what Jesus' point here is that this is serious stuff. And I know that for some people, this is like across the line. Okay, Pastor Mark, I was with you, some of the stuff you say. You get here and it's like, come on now. You don't really want us to understand that such a thing is that serious. Well, this is what Jesus says. And you really can't interpret it any way else than what he says, that it is a serious matter. Okay? And if you don't take anything else, understand that that's a serious thing. Hidden lust, mental adultery is a serious thing that Jesus does not want his followers to be participating in. Therefore, the sin must be dealt with, and regardless of what it takes. Now, let me also say, I don't think that Jesus wanted people's eyeballs flying around. Okay? I don't think Jesus envisioned that there'd be people at church all of a sudden, "Oh, I've lusted," and just throw his eyeball out across the room, you know? "Oh, yeah, me too, and there goes another one." And people say, "Does anyone have a knife? I've got to cut off my hand," you know, and this kind of thing. Because as far as I know, concerning eyes and hands, no one in church history has ever done that. So people, probably many people have committed a sin, but no one's ever done what Jesus has said to remedy it. So what that tells us is he's speaking in a way of hyperbole, which means he's saying, giving an extreme example to show us that we are to deal with it seriously. Okay? He doesn't want us really pulling out our eyes, because then you got your other eye still there. And this is a problem of the heart. What he's talking about is doing what is necessary to keep this sin from occurring in your life. Okay? So we are to deal drastically with sin, and this one we're talking about today, and those things that lead us to sin. So what might some of these be? Relationships you have with people of the opposite sex that you should not have. Friendships that could go too far, maybe you think about, and you should not be thinking about. Relationships, people you work with, things, could be that. Here's one. How about internet sites? Internet sites that you should not visit. I'm going to tell you a little story here. This is from May 21st, 2012. It comes from the online publication, The Time of Israel. Here's the headline. Rabbis tell 60,000 in New York, get rid of the internet if you know what's good for you. In an extraordinary gathering of nearly 60,000 ultra-Orthodox Jews, leading rabbis of the yeshiva and Hasidic world all but banned the internet. A decision rendered by Rabbi Shmuel Vosner, one of the senior rabbis in the Orthodox world, said the internet could be used for work purposes in an office, but only if absolutely necessary and with the use of a filter. There was no justification for internet use at home under any circumstances. The ruling came during a five-hour program Sunday at the Citi Field Baseball Stadium in Queens, New York, in which prominent rabbis discussed the dangers of the internet and how to cope with them. While some speakers seemed to advocate a more moderate approach that might have allowed the compromise of a religious or highly filtered internet, most were dead set against it, stating categorically that all Jews who considered themselves Orthodox were obligated to stay as far away from the internet as possible. The ruling declared at least a third of the internet, and that is probably an old report, was full of content that no Jew should be looking at. The article noted that although he did not use the term pornography, this is what he was talking about. These are Jews, not even Christians, who recognize the danger of what's on the internet for lust and inappropriate viewing. Now, I'm not advocating that we take this view. I mean, no one's going to really do this, except maybe some of these people. Okay, it's just not going to happen, realistically. But their point in bringing this up needs to be taken, that the internet into your homes and into your phones is a possible gateway and source of much lustful intent. Is it not? Am I wrong about this? No, I don't think I'm wrong about this. That stuff, you can hardly go on the internet without something prompting you to click on this, click on that. You know, and just a couple clicks and all of a sudden you could find yourself in a place you shouldn't be. So what I am saying, if that's a problem for you, then you need to deal with it. It may mean getting the internet out of your, and not having access to it. It may mean putting filters that prohibit certain things from coming into your your system or your computer or your phone or whatever it is. But I don't think it's all right to say, well, that's just the way it is, and we're just going to live this way, and we can't do anything about it. No, drastic action. You do what needs to be done. Movies and TV shows you should not be watching. Are there things that come on that you go to that you know you shouldn't be watching? Maybe so. What should you do? Don't watch them. Oh, but I love those shows. No, don't watch them. Don't watch them. Go to that old 50s channel. Do you have that? And turn on Andy Griffith, okay? Or turn on, you know, I Love Lucy or one of those shows. I know some of you are saying, what's he talking about? I don't even know what those things are. Those were great shows. Those, and you could watch them. You didn't have to worry that someone was going to come out half naked into the scene because it just didn't happen. I'm just saying to you this morning that that is a channel by which you could fall into this sin, or you may already be in that sin, and you may need to do something about it. And I should mention also right here that if you're letting your children have free access to the internet unsupervised, you better watch out. You better watch out for what they're looking at and what that is doing to them. Not only the sin part, but what that is doing to them psychologically. Because that's a real problem that is growing up. Lightly supervised children just all over the internet. My goodness. Young people. You should not, you have to be aware of that. And, of course, places that you should not be going. Maybe there's places you just shouldn't go there because it leads to that. So you don't go there. You make that sacrifice. You cut that part out of your life. Say, I'm not going to go there anymore. Because that's what Jesus is talking about here. So, but Jesus isn't the only one in the New Testament talking about this. Paul puts it this way. He says in Colossians 3, put to death, therefore, what is earthly in you, sexual immorality, impurity, passion, evil desire. That's what he's talking about. Covetousness. All this is idolatry. Because on account of these, the wrath of God is coming. Now, notice a couple things here in this verse. What is he talking about? He's talking about things that are impure, evil desires, coveting, the very kind of things that Jesus is talking about. And what does he say? How does he say we should deal with these? Put them to death. Don't monkey around with them. Put them to death. Get them out of your life. Just put an end to them. Jesus says, cut off that part. And what else does he say? On account of these, the wrath of God is coming. Jesus talked about being thrown into hell. So Paul takes this stuff very seriously, just as Jesus does. It is a serious matter. This sin is a serious matter, and I would say is probably widespread through church-going communities. Wouldn't surprise me at all. Even though it is a secret sin, it's kept hidden. Not the person out there stealing things and gets caught and says, oh, you took this, and people saw it. This is something that hides. And that's what makes it really difficult, because it remains in the darkness, hidden and unexposed. It thrives. It lives on until someone pulls the plug on it. And that person should be you if you're a follower of Jesus. So all this to say that this is a serious matter. That keeping the seventh commandment involves more than the actual act of adultery, and that sin needs to be dealt with at all cost here. Okay. So why does Jesus say this? You know, why these restrictions? Oh, Jesus, why are you doing this to us? you know, we're your followers, but you know, we might think, well, we're human, we like to have fun, this is the way we are. It's much easier to indulge those things than to not indulge those things. So why does he say this? Let me mention two reasons. One, he cares about marriages. Lusting for another easily does lead to the act of adultery, which not only brings pain and breaks trust, but also is a breach of the marriage covenant entered into before God. See, one part of this is that the lusting can lead to the act, the outward act. And so that's one reason why you shouldn't be thinking about other people in that way outside of marriage, because you might just be led into that. And then it's going to have a very adverse effect on your marriage. Very painful, very hurtful, widespread pain, widespread hurt, trust is gone. It's going to take a long time, a lot of work to get this, for the healing to take place. But it's also something that involves the Lord, because the Lord is witness to your marriage in which you made a vow to be faithful. I think there's something in the vows about forsaking all others, taking that person only to yourself. Aren't those things in the vows, marriage vows? Remember that? That we say no to all the others after we're married. And that includes the way we think, our thinking. And so back in Old Testament days, some of the people were complaining, why aren't you blessing us, God? Why aren't you giving us good stuff? Why are our lives so bad? And in Malachi 2:14, the prophet says, look, it's because you're being unfaithful in your marriages. The Lord was witness between you and the wife of your youth, to whom you have been faithless. Though she is your companion and your wife by covenant, you enter into a covenant when you're married to be faithful to that person for how long? So long as you both shall live, right? Till death do us part. Not until you find something better. Not until you think, well, this one, I need an upgrade, you know. Not that. None of that stuff. Can't exchange for a newer model. You can't do those things. But this is what they were doing. They were being unfaithful. And Malachi thinks, you think God's going to bless you? No, you've broken covenant. You're sinning, man. And you've got to stop it. So Jesus cares, or the Lord cares about marriages, and he wants your marriages to be good, faithful, solid. No other people involved in any kind of intimate way, but also not even in the area of thinking about other people in that way. It has no place in a marriage, according to the Lord. But also there's a second reason, and that is because he wants his disciples to be obedient from the heart. Obedient from the heart and not in just outward actions. The one described here is thinking about adultery in his heart. That's what Jesus says. He's committed all adultery with her in his heart. So it's this heart matter. That means he isn't fully given to loving his spouse or obeying the Lord. And of course, this goes both ways, man or woman. Okay, so the person who is, as he says here, committed adultery in his heart is not fully loving their spouse as they should. They are only loving them in part. And so also with this, that person is not only their spouse, but it's also the Lord. Such a person is not loving the Lord with all his heart, with all his soul, with all his mind. If you are over here with your mind lusting about some person, then you're not loving the Lord with your mind at all. You're sinning against the Lord with your mind. That's what you're doing. God's will is that we would be completely sanctified, that our whole spirit, soul, and body be kept blameless until the Lord's return, 1 Thessalonians 5:23, that we be completely sanctified, and that includes our thoughts, our minds. And I know you're saying, well, yeah, that's hard. Yeah, it is hard. It is hard. I would agree with you. That's a difficult thing to do. But this is what we're called to. And one of the reasons why we're called to this, because it pleases God, there's a lot of reasons, but back in Matthew 5:20, Jesus said that our righteousness was to surpass, it had to excel that of the scribes and Pharisees. It's just what he says. Your righteousness, I tell you, unless your righteousness exceeds that of the scribes and Pharisees, you'll not enter the kingdom of heaven. Well, you know, the scribes and Pharisees appeared righteous. They had an outward righteousness people were impressed with. You know, they were careful about not being defiled by anyone, by touching near, getting too close, washing their hands before the right times, ceremonially, only eating the right food prepared in the right way. But Jesus said about them in Matthew 23 that although they appeared righteous, that inwardly they were full of greed, full of self-indulgence and hypocrisy and lawlessness and all uncleanness. That's what was in these people. Okay, this group of scribes and Pharisees. Jesus says, that's what's inside of them. But you, your righteousness, as my followers, has to surpass all that. And you can't be this hypocritical person. You can't be righteous on the outside, just obeying the act of the command. You and me, we have to be righteous inside as well. We are sanctified through and through. The Bible tells us this is God's desire. So we can't be full of self-indulgence and hypocrisy, lawlessness and uncleanness and lustful thoughts. That simply will not do for his followers. Now, this sin can be especially powerful, I think, in entangling and enslaving people, because what happens is your mind gets trained to think in a certain way, and it has to now be untrained to think that way. And you develop thinking patterns that become customary and familiar and easy to get to in your mind. And so the longer you allow lustful thoughts or lustful intentions to be in your mind, the harder, there's more to deal with. So it is difficult. But you might feel that it's impossible to be freed from this, that it's like too much, that I'd have to do too many things differently. I'd have to make too many changes if I were to forsake this sin. Well, you would may have to do a lot of changes, drastic changes, just like Jesus says. Just like he says. So what can we do? Okay, let me mention a few things. But before I mention these three, this is a side note, and I'm not going to preach on this because I know I could easily get in trouble. But let me just say that this also has implications for the way we choose to dress. Okay? So do you get what I'm saying, or do I need to say more? No, I think I need to say more. But I don't want to say more. The Bible talks about modesty for a reason. Okay? That's important. So people are not dressing in a way that is designed to create lustful thoughts in other people. Okay, now you know what I'm talking about? Okay. Parents, this applies to you. Okay, so take that to heart. There is that side of this as well. But what can we do then? Okay, three things. First of all, recognize that lustful intent in your heart is a sin. Jesus says it's adultery. You can call it something else if you want, but that won't change it. It's still sin and serious. It is serious. So you need to deal seriously with the sin in your life. That's the second thing we need. And it's not just this sin, but other sins. We need to deal with them. Why? Because Jesus says to. He says it. Not just me. He says, you got to deal with this. We have to remember, too, that there is not only forgiveness with the Lord, but there's also help in overcoming temptation. You are not on your own. The Lord doesn't say, okay, now go try your best. He doesn't do that. The Lord helps us in a variety of ways. He gives us His Spirit. He gives us His teaching. He gives us Christian friends and people to talk to and good friends that we can share and pray together with to share our struggles and to mutually kind of make progress in these areas and have victory in these areas. Okay? But yet I know that at times, especially with these drastic actions that Jesus is talking about here, you're just gonna stop this. You might think, man, I can't stop it. I can't break off this relationship. I can't make a commitment not to watch that stuff anymore. It's too hard. And I feel like I need that. Let me just say to you that there is divine joy on the other side. That once you do the hard part of getting that sin out of your life, letting it go, putting it to death, there is a joy and contentment that comes from the Lord that you will not experience as long as bad or other sins are still in your life. There is a deep, profound joy and contentment that God pours into the hearts of those who follow Him. And they go, oh, they can't live without that. But then if you just let it go, you find more of God, it seems. More of His peace, more of His joy flooding into your life. So recognize that lustful intent in your heart is sin, even though it may seem like everyone is doing it. That doesn't mean it's okay. Deal seriously with the sin in your life. And then one thing you can do is to commit or recommit solely to your spouse, if you're married, solely to your spouse. There was a Christian author and apologist who lived in North Africa, Carthage, in the 2nd and 3rd centuries. His name was Tertullian. He was a really smart guy. Eventually, though, he went off the rails and got into some weird stuff. But before he did all that, he said some really cool things. One of the things he said you might have heard before. He's the one who said the blood of the martyrs is the seed of the church. We still say that. We still think about that and the truth of that. But he also said this. He said the Christian man is born masculine for his wife and for no other woman. And the opposite, the inverse would be true as well. About the Christian woman is born feminine for his husband, for her husband, and for no other man. And I think what he's saying here is something that we should take to heart. If you're married, you are for your spouse and no one else. Right? Amen? Okay. Yes. So I would end today by asking you to consider the commitment made by a man thousands of years before Jesus is talking about this. A man named Job. Now you think of Job, you think all he did was go around suffering. Well, he did suffer a lot, but he too said and did some pretty good things because we know Job was a righteous man. And this is one of the things he said and that he tells us in Job 31:1-4. He says, I have made a covenant with my eyes not to look lustfully at a girl. For what is man's lot from God above, his heritage from the Almighty on high? Is it not ruin for the wicked, disaster for those who do wrong? Does he not see my ways and count my every step? This is so insightful, what Job is telling us here. He says, I am making this agreement. I am making a commitment. I'm doing what I can do to avoid looking lustfully in lustful thoughts. I'm doing that. And this is the reason why. Because the result from God, who sees my ways and counts my every step, is ruin for the wicked and disaster for those who do wrong, like lusting after other women. That's what he's saying here. He's saying really similar to what Jesus is teaching us. That God sees, and there is a punishment, there is disaster for those who continue in this sin. And that it has to be dealt with. And this is what Job did. He says, I'm making a commitment not to do this, not to lust, not to think lustful thoughts anymore. Or maybe he never did, I don't know. But I'm not going to do it, he says. Because God sees. So Job was determined to control his thoughts. And he knew the Lord would judge those who do wrong. So he was going to avoid lustful intent. Just as Jesus said for us to do. Father, I know that there are many, many people who wrestle with this. Who, for them, this is a real problem in their life. And I pray, Father, that you would deliver them from it. I pray, Father, that they would take the action necessary to help stop it in their life. That they would close off those channels that bring it into their mind. That they would just do whatever is necessary, no matter how strong that is. Because the consequences of not doing so are serious. And I pray, Lord, that you would give us all victory in this area, that we would have the kind of righteousness you talked about, Jesus, that is not just on the outside, not just what others see, but is a righteousness that is in us as well, that is of the heart, that is through and through, a righteousness that pleases you, a righteousness that you want to see in all of your followers. Help us in this, we pray.